Welcome to Healthcare and Hire, a podcast for healthcare professionals and aspiring healthcare executives looking for information, association, and inspiration from higher-level leaders across the healthcare industry. I'm Iqbal Acha, career consultant, healthcare recruiter, and registered pharmacist. Every week, I sit down to interview healthcare executives, clinical leaders, medical entrepreneurs, and industry experts to learn how they got to where they are today, what they see as the future of healthcare, and what they're doing to make healthcare more accessible, affordable, and effective. Let's find out more about today's guest. Christina Nickel is the Director of Clinical Laboratory Services at Bryan Health. She leads a team of professionals who implement, provide, and ensure high-quality laboratory and patient testing services across 20 clinics and 4 critical access hospitals. Christina joined Bryan Health in 2008 as a laboratory quality manager. Prior to this, she served as laboratory director for Heartland Urgent Care and as a medical technologist for Exempla Healthcare, Lincoln Community Hospital, and St. Francis Medical Center. Christina earned her bachelor's degree in medical technology from the University of Northern Colorado and her master's in healthcare administration from Bellevue University. She earned her medical laboratory scientist certification through the American Society for Clinical Pathology and is also a certified professional in healthcare quality through the National Association for Healthcare Quality. Hello, Christy, and welcome to the Healthcare and Hire podcast.
Hi, I'm excited to be talking with you today about what we're doing at our laboratory at Bryan Medical Center.
I'm excited to hear all about it and you and your team and the many different steps of your journey that you have had to get to where you are today and what you're doing to continuously make healthcare a better place. I'm sure there are many listeners today that are tuning in for the first time, wondering who you might be and what you do. Why don't we take this opportunity and formally have you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are, what your role is, and how do you help take healthcare to a higher level?
Sure. My name is Christina Nickel. I am the laboratory director here at Bryan Medical Center in Lincoln, Nebraska. We have two hospitals that are within 15 minutes of each other. We have about 600 beds between the two, two full service laboratories on those campuses. And then we also have an offsite small lab that I'll talk about a little bit later. I've been here at the medical center for 14 years. The last three, I've been in the director role. So I've had quite the crash course in laboratory directorship during a pandemic, but I felt like I was well prepared. I worked as the quality manager prior to this, so I had a good understanding of what all needs to happen and how we can meet those needs. You asked about taking healthcare to a higher level. My team and I are constantly looking at what we can do to improve not only our inpatients, but also our outside non-patients or outpatients that may need laboratory testing or have high deductibles or don't have access to testing, and really trying to make it easier for those folks in our community.
So I think that that's going to be a good conversation for us to really delve into, right? I'm sure that you and many of our listeners today are very familiar with recent CMS guidelines about how they're changing reimbursement models for inpatient versus outpatient and RVUs and all of these little conversations that I'm hearing from across the healthcare spectrum. But for the listeners that are tuning in and maybe are not familiar with Bryan Health, this is an organization very centrally, medium to large size health system, has 6,000 staff members with 5 medical centers, actually with a variety of several accredited specialty centers, including cardiology, sleep medicine, of course, clinical laboratory, and it's got its own College of Health Sciences.
On top of that, your organization actually has just won award after award. And just this year, it was actually recognized by Newsweek magazine as having one of America's best physical rehab centers. It was named a five-star hospital by the Center of Medicare and Medicaid Services. And it was listed among the elite 12% that won best honors by the U.S. News and World Report. So you are a reputable organization with a lot of, you know, weight and a lot of good accolades underneath in a variety of branches. And today we're really going to delve into clinical laboratory. I will say that you are my first representative of this healthcare discipline. So very excited to have you and kind of hear a little bit more about your journey. Prior to us joining on, or being on this call, I know you and I had an offline conversation about some of the challenges that you and your team faced when the pandemic first came about, and you know the way that you were able to maneuver and look at new opportunities to help understand it. Hey, this is where we need to go in order not just to be sustainable but profitable in the midst of a lot of the things that are happening. Why don't we talk a little bit about that, Christy? Tell me like what you started to notice either at the outset of the pandemic or maybe it was like 6 months in where you started to see some challenges for yourself, for your team, for the community. And what were some of the things that you decided to put into play that really made a difference in terms of how the community was able to access services and how the laboratory played a pivotal role in achieving better outcomes?
Yeah, The two things that come right off the top of mind is staffing and supplies. They rapidly became our most challenging situation throughout the pandemic. I think most laboratories at this point, even prior to the pandemic, were struggling with staffing. Laboratory professionals are few and far between. And even though we try to promote our profession, it's hard to get people into the field because when people think about healthcare, they typically think of nursing or physicians' assistants. They may even think about physical therapy, rehab, those kinds of services, but they rarely think about laboratory unless they've had a family member who went into laboratory or, they're recruited. And that's something that we're starting to work on too. Before this situation, we only had people coming into our laboratory as phlebotomists. And typically the phlebotomists are like the most important piece. They're the first ones to collect the sample. If the sample is not collected properly, if there's any kind of labeling issues, everything really is pinned on getting it right in the beginning. And those people are really critical. We get a lot of pre-med and nursing students that come to work for us as phlebotomists, but they typically have all their interaction mostly outside of the laboratory. They don't do a whole lot of work within the laboratory. So most of those folks look at, I like the rehab area, or I like surgery, or I like the ER. I think I'm going to go work in those fields. They don't usually pick the lab. When we got into this, we really noticed that we did not have enough medical laboratory scientists, which are the four-year bachelor degree required for a high-complexity laboratory, which is what we operate in the hospitals. And we have a good MLT program, which is the associate's degree, but we really needed some more of those MLSs. A few years ago, we really started working on a transition program through the University of Nebraska in the Medical Center, University of Nebraska Medical Center in Omaha. And we started helping our MLTs transition into an MLS position while on the job. So basically, they get experience with us. They have to take exams regularly that we have to facilitate for them or proctor. And then after they complete the process, they're eligible to go sit for the exam. We've had a lot of folks go through that process. Well, we noticed that we had a handful of those two levels, but we had not enough. And we thought, okay, what are the things that we could remove from their work and really keep them at top of license work that we could hire a high school graduate to come in and do? And it was really a unique situation. It helped us because not only did we have some people come in and fill the gap, it introduced all these folks into the laboratory, into the testing side that never would have seen it. And several of those people have started to go through the MLT program or started to come into the laboratory MLS program as well. So we established initially we had lab assistants that we placed in the ERs to actually help with collections more quickly and actually some testing that we could do right there to try to move patients through more quickly. Throughput was a huge issue for us in the beginning, but it's also just continued. Our ER is a very, very busy place. In fact, we just hit our all-time high volume, which just blows my mind because we've been so busy. I don't know how, like, after the pandemic, we hit the max that we've ever had. But that's really important, is that we keep that ER flowing, because if one area gets backed up, it backs up everybody else. So, we also have to do the inpatient lab so we can get patients discharged and so they can bring those ER patients into the hospital. Those lab assistants are really critical in that area, and they've been really happy with that role. There's a certain personality that really enjoys that work. And we've really just encouraged them and added some more as we've needed to. Another piece that we added was customer service representatives to answer the phones, just answer regular questions like, have you gotten the order? Are you ready to come collect the sample? But also, like, what is your results, or what is the result? How long is it going to be for this? What kind of tube do I need to collect? Those kinds of things. So they're handling a lot of that. And that really frees up those MLTs and the MLSs to be able to actually do the testing in the laboratory. We also implemented specimen processing technicians, which is another entry-level position. They come in and they basically get the samples in and they receive them into our computer systems, do the centrifugation, spin down those samples so we can perform testing, deliver them to the different testing areas. And those, they have really enjoyed their role too. It's been kind of nice, because I remember working the bench, answering the phones and prepping or receiving specimens were like my least favorite things, but these guys really enjoy it. And so we've been really happy with the success of that. It's really helped us stay ahead of having staffing issues. And we also, I'd also talked about supplies being an issue. That was one that really kind of blindsided us. Our CFO at the time, who is now the CEO of our health system, Russ Gronewald, he actually had the foresight, like right when it started, to tell us, you guys really need to order a month ahead in your supplies. Make sure that you have plenty on hand. And we kind of were like already trying to get to the lean process where we only have one or two days on hand if we really could. And I had to like let my techs hoarding come back out so they could just hoard as many supplies as possible. But we really got into a process where we every day had a conversation, we had a call, and we quickly had to expand it to the whole health system and our contacts in the laboratory at each of those sites. We're a fairly new health system as far as how we've grown with all the hospitals. Both Grand Island and Kearney, two of the major medical centers in central Nebraska, are just coming in this last year. So it's been a lot happening. And for us to get that coordinated is not quite complete yet. So we had daily calls where we talked about, okay, what are supply issues that you're running into? Are there things we can send to you? Or are there things you can send to us? And we also noticed really quickly that one platform for COVID testing was not going to do it. All of the vendors at some point had shortages of supplies. Plastics was a huge issue. Mm-hmm. And we had different tests that, because they would redirect one line to do more COVID testing, we wouldn't be able to do that other test. So not only was it critical for us to have communication with our pandemic team, which I sat on for our health system, it was also really critical to keep our providers up to date, keep our leaders up to date, all of the frontline up to date. And it was just changing so fast that we started having daily updates with our frontline in the lab as well. And I'll never forget one day I had a change come in. I literally like got off the phone, walked out into the lab, and I said, okay, now we have to use this different swab because those are out. Well, I really wish you would give us more notice, Christy. And I said, I just got it. I'm giving it to you as soon as I possibly can. But that's just how the world was. I mean, it's just constant evolution during that process and really trying to adapt as quickly as possible. But, a lot of the hospitals, even not necessarily part of our system, maybe even competitors, we really had to work together during that time, because there were areas where you just did not have what you needed at different times. And we could beg and borrow and loan and buy. And I mean, we did everything. At one point we had had somebody drive down to Kansas City to get some test cartridges from a hospital down there that we just happened to have a contact at. And they were like, yeah, we can give you a box. You got to come get them. We're like, we'll send a courier. I mean, wow. And we paid, I don't know, $500 for some guy to drive down to Kansas City. But we're like, we need those cartridges. Like at that point, it was so critical. And we had also opened up the first drive-through in Nebraska for the COVID response. And so we operated that out of the area where we opened on-demand testing for our lower income patients and those who may have real high deductibles or no insurance at all. And so we were able to redirect some of that supply and resources, staff and space to COVID testing. But it was quite an evolution. That whole, you cannot pay for a better training program as a laboratory director, I am telling you.
I'm so blown away by the variety of actions that you've taken over the course of all of these different pivots, right? Like you've created basically a pipeline from high school into this master's program for those that choose to pursue that, but you know, giving them the exposure and ease of entry with encouragement is really critical from a recruitment perspective. And then we'll talk about some of this as well, but you know, I'm really curious to know, like, because of that kind of program, right? Like what has the retention been? Like, you know, these are individuals that have been exposed to health science, you know, for the first time, probably, and they've fallen in love with it. Like, do they, if you have numbers, that would be wonderful just to understand.
You know, I don't have numbers today. We have, but I can tell you, I think we've lost maybe one specimen processor. In that whole time, they have really enjoyed what they've moved into. We've had a couple that we've actually promoted into different positions already to help support. And really, we've had to, I'm constantly looking at, okay, what are our problems and how can we address it? And one of our specimen processors, who is just like an amazing, like, on point, always knows what she's doing, really detail oriented. We're like, okay, we need a lab assistant to help with point of care testing because it has outgrown. We have one person who oversees point of care testing for all 600 beds, both hospitals.
Oh my gosh.
We've got some good systems that help manage that, but I'm like, we are at the point where just the training alone for onboarding nurses for glucose or whatever else they might be doing is really significant. So, I was like, okay, let's take a lab assist. Let's put a lab assistant position out there. And this, one, specimen processor was really interested and we were like, oh, hands down, she'll be great. So she's actually moved out of that position, but into another position to help support in another area. And we're going to redirect some of her time towards supply management and helping us get that more organized and able to manage it. Because right now I estimate we're at least spending 40 hours a week between all of us just managing supplies. Literally, okay, what's been back ordered, what's been canceled, because we found out we don't get notifications on those. In the pandemic, there were a lot of them that we got no notification because there were so many. They literally could not contact all of their clients to say, okay, well, this is out and now we're doing this. I had calls with executives from Cepheid, from Siemens. I mean, it was constant where we were like, okay, what's happening with this? What do we need to do? And it gave us an opportunity to go, okay, we're not going to have these cartridges in a month because they are running out and they're going to have to, they're waiting for supply to build these cartridges. Let's find another platform that we can run it on. And I'm really proud to say we never ran out of tests. We were always able to provide COVID tests. And I mean, antigen and PCR, we were always able to do it. And I'm like, I don't know how, but we did. Well, I think a lot of it was the constant tracking. Like mm-hmm. We developed a spreadsheet of all of our supplies that might have issues that all of our, it was on a Google Doc. So all of our entities could access it and they could all add theirs. And then that way we could see, oh, look, Crete, which is a little critical access hospital we work with and very close by, they're short on these. We can send them a box, you know, those kinds of things. And we were able to really help each other out much better that way. But I was surprised at how the supply issue really hit us at the medical center way before the critical accesses. I vividly remember one of our calls where we were like, okay, what's your backup method? Because I implemented health system lab calls during this time. And at one point we were having daily calls among the whole health system. We still, today we do it every other week on Tuesdays mornings. We have a call with the whole, all of the laboratory leaders in the health system. But at that time they were like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you don't have a backup. No, we only have the one. And they were like, anybody want a COVID test could get a COVID test. I'm like, you have to limit it. And they're like, well, we're not going to tell the providers no. I said, listen, it's not about telling them no. It's about telling them, this is how many we have. How do you want to use them? Yep. Because they will run out. And I remember just like, you could hear a pin drop. People were like, what? We're going to run out? How are we going to run out? And I'm like, the supply is not there. You have to have a backup. And so they did. A lot of them did end up getting a backup system. But another good one that came up was during one of our pandemic calls when I said, we can't get COVID tests. And I think it was one of our providers said, this is ridiculous. We have the funds to buy a COVID test. So I said, oh, we've got the funds, but we can't get any tests. They are not able to make enough. And they were like, oh, like it was just a whole
the new light bulb went off.
Yes, like, what? Oh. But because we've never had to deal with that. And right. In our lifetimes, we have never had to deal with it on this level.
Shortages. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we had to look at, okay, which we're going to do employee screening. Okay. Well, we don't have to, but our organization said, no, we need to do it. We're going to do it. Okay. So our lab actually had to manage that process too. So we did all of the employee screening once a week, and it was like everybody for a while. And then it was people who haven't been vaccinated. And then it was like, okay, well, I guess since we don't really know if they have it now or not, you know, cause there's this window of when you can pick up the test and not, they're like, okay, well, we won't do it now, but that was a lot. And we had to say, okay, we cannot possibly do these in-house, even though we did develop our own test. We had an EUA that we developed on our Luminex test platform. And we could do a lot of tests at a time, but we didn't have the supply to do that many. And so we talked to one of the big reference labs, like, can we start sending these to you? And they're like, yeah, we're putting up a couple more Cepheids. And like, they were already starting to get more systems up to help support it too. So it was just a constant, where are we at? What's going to come? What do we need to do to make sure we're able to provide testing during that time?
Christy, in this conversation, like you're very resourceful, you're creative, and you're innovative, because that's what you need to be, right? Like you need to be in order to be able to help consistently push forward and just get through. And I love that. I really do. I am curious though, because those are the things that you can control. There's also elements that you just can't. And finding a resourceful, creative, innovative way around reimbursements is probably a big challenge. And you know, we talked about this earlier at the beginning of this episode about how so many, you know, health providers are being impacted by reductions in reimbursement and compensation. And I cannot imagine that, you know, laboratory is exempt. I'm pretty sure you guys are probably on the top of the chopping block. What has that been like? You know, and what are some of the ways that you're trying to be more resourceful to combat, or you know, find an alternative way to maintain reimbursements at a reasonable rate, or if not, you know, just to help maintain the business as it moves forward?
Yeah. Our laboratory and the community in Lincoln here in Nebraska has really had an interesting evolution with the laboratories. At one point, they were all owned by one big reference lab, and then they were kind of split off, and then they were joined again into another company, and then the hospital started buying them back. And so now we have them all separated. So like our competitor across town has their own laboratory, and we have our laboratories. And one of the things that we started looking at is, what about outreach? You know, because my predecessor was very opposed to doing any kind of reference lab work, just because of the work that comes with that and all the other headaches that come with it. Which as far as what she had experienced with this other entity. Now, I came from another hospital out in central Nebraska that had a very successful outreach program and was still hospital-based, but it was theirs. It wasn't part of this big corporation, and it worked really, really well. So I've always had more of an affinity towards outreach and doing more reference lab work for clinics and for other little hospitals that maybe can't have the test menu. So we've been working really to bring on more and more I would say it was about early in 2019, we brought in our Bryan Physician Networks, what we call InReach. So all of that lab testing that was being done there was actually being sent out of our health system. It was not coming to us. And so that was one of the first things we were like, all right, we got to get this. We got to get these in. This is low hanging fruit. Like, why are we not doing our lab testing? And so that came in. And then we started looking at other opportunities. Well, part of the challenge that we've run into is a limited IT support. That our whole world just is hinged on IT support. And we can't do anything in the laboratory without IT support. So what we've done is started looking at contracting a company to help us build our interfaces for clients as we start going to expand that service line. This next year, we're going to really be focusing on that. And then the next year after that, we have a little bit more of a expansion on that that we're planning. But I always tell my team, I'm like, that's what we're planning. Because, you know, you got to have an idea of where you want to go. But how you get there is going to change multiple times, probably. But you got to be able to pivot. As long as you can pivot, you're going to be good. So, yeah, that's one of the things is really expanding our outreach. The biggest thing that we've been really successful with is our on-demand testing, which I really think a lot of it had to do with how we went about implementing it. This is also called direct access testing or direct to consumer testing. Basically, the patient can come up and order their test. They don't need a physician order. They say, I want to buy this test, and we provide it. Some states have laws against that and you can't do it. Nebraska is a silent state, so we took advantage of that. And we started with working with our physicians, because when I've talked to other clinicians that work in the laboratory that have dealt with this, almost all the time, it's like, well, the providers felt like we were really stepping on their toes, or they felt like it wasn't appropriate and that sort of thing. So we were really careful about how we rolled this out. And we wanted to make sure that it was a good partnership with our clinics and our physicians in those clinics. It helped that we have our own physician network. So we were able to go into them and have conversations and say, you know, I know you guys are busy. You've got lots and lots of patients coming to you. Do you have times where you have patients who like need a UA or they need a CBC and you don't really need them to come into the office? And do you have patients who have high deductibles or don't want to have to pay a copay, or like, these are the options we have. And if we provided this testing at a lower cost, a ridiculously lower cost, would you be interested in sending them to us? And we had a list of tests so quickly. Jane Ellenwood, who is our laboratory services manager now, she was our outreach manager at the time, our client services manager. And she really spent a lot of time going out and talking to physicians and making sure that we had the tests they wanted. We had good competitive prices. They actually developed these big notepads where they could rip off a sheet and give it to the patient, and they could mark which tests they wanted the patient to get, had our prices right on there. They would bring it to our place. Don't have to go through registration. They're a self-pay, not a self-pay, but an actual on-demand patient. So we did basically like requisition entry, like they're our client, and entered it. They did their collection. They pay at the time of service. We didn't do any cash collection. And we rolled all this out during the pandemic too, by the way. But it was really a great partnership because the providers were so excited that we were going to have all these results in their chart, in my chart. So the provider could still access those when they did get their appointment and give them direction. And if they wanted to email them and say, hey, I had this done. Should I have anything else? Do I need to come in? Whatever, they could do that. But it was really helpful for them too, because they just didn't have the bandwidth to go through all of these people who maybe just needed a test. Or we've had a lot of patients who have come in and said, I want all these tests. And we have to be good stewards of our resources. And we go through and say, okay, this is probably not a test that you should be ordering like this, or we don't offer that test. And then on the other hand, just recently, we had one of our offices reach out and say, I want you to add this to this. I want to do a diabetic panel, and I want you to have it on your list so all my patients can come have them done. And we're like, okay, well, that takes time for us to get set up because we work with marketing. We have to update our website. We have to update our billing. We have to update the fee schedule and all of these things. But they're like, every day, when is it coming? When is it coming? And I'm like, oh, I just love that they're so supportive of it, because they can make or break it. And it's just been such a huge benefit. It's brought in thousands of new patients to our health system. People who have never been to a Brian facility have come in through this program. So that's been probably one of our biggest wins with this.
That's a huge win, Christy. And, you know, I mean, I love the way that these stories are coming out from in this conversation, right? Again, it's about, like, you know, lowering the bar to entry and making communication, collaboration, and exposure like front and center. And it just sounds like it's a winning recipe across the board. You know, Christy, I always ask my guests, because you're in a position where you're not only, you know, supervising other team members, and you're not only leading a department, right? You're collaborating and communicating with other directors of clinical laboratories, probably, if not just across the state, across the Midwest, maybe even across the country. And, you know, you're seeing a lot of changes that are up and coming, right? New technologies. Like 25 years ago, when I was working as a laboratory technician, I used the Abbott Spectrum and the TDX. Like, that's what we had. And that's like how, you know, how far back ago that was my exposure, right? But I'm sure there's lots of new instrumentations that are available now to make testing faster, more efficient, and more accurate. But when you think about the next 2 years, right, like whether it's technology or whether it's regulations that's concerned clinical laboratories, like, what are the buzz topics that are, you know, happening in the circles that you roll with right now as it relates to how clinical laboratories need to prepare for up and coming changes? Or even, again, it could be technology or regulations, but I'm curious about what, like, is the hot topic right now, so that when people are listening to this episode, they may have some insights about what changes to prepare for.
Yeah, staffing continues to be a hot topic across the nation. I am active with the American Society for Clinical Pathology, previously the Clinical Laboratory Management Association, which just recently merged into ASCP. This is something I hear all the time. The other things that I'm hearing because of that staffing issue is automation, more and more automation. And I think what we're going to see is a lot more of that, even in smaller labs that typically you wouldn't be putting automation in because it's like, we don't have the volume. Well, now it's not, we don't have the volume. It's that we don't have the expertise, or we don't have the people to actually do it. So for example, you might have a critical access hospital. Blood banking or doing the testing for someone to get a transfusion is pretty critical in the laboratory. That's one of the things that we say, that's one place that you can really truly kill a patient. And that's not something we want to do. So one of the things that I have seen recommended, and that we're actually working with a couple of our smaller hospitals, is putting in automation for blood bank testing. Actually having the type and screen, the cross match done electronically by a system rather than a person, because, you know, a lot of times those smaller hospitals have maybe one or two maybe people on in the middle of the night. You get called in, you got to do all of the tests by yourself. It's not like, oh, I'm going to deliver this chemistry specimen over here and I'll go do the CBC. No, they're doing all of it. So to have that automation where you could put that analyzer, that specimen on that analyzer, and get a result that you can trust, I think that's going to be huge. I think front-end automation, where we can just dump specimens into a machine that's basically going to receive them into our system, our EHR, spin them down, put them on racks to go to the right area. Those are things that we're looking at. I think it's really already becoming more common, but I think we're going to see a lot of that. And also, I know a lot of the higher complexity tests, so things that we typically would send to big reference labs, I know they're coming out with some more automated, smaller analyzers that we could potentially put in our laboratories. Right now, we're working on flow cytometry. We send a lot of that testing out today, but we're looking at bringing that in this next year, which is something we've had conversation about it, me and my team, for a couple of years, but before that, it just was not even something we even talked about. So to be able to be bringing that in is kind of exciting. And we're looking at our send out menu to see what are some of the higher level or higher volume tests that we could potentially do in-house that we might want to look at.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Christy, we spent a lot of time talking about, you know, the great things that you're doing at Bryan Health. I want to kind of shift our conversation a little bit more about you. And you've had such a remarkable career. I know that today that you are the Director of Clinical Laboratory at Bryan Health. As you mentioned, you were also a laboratory quality manager prior to this role, but you've also been a lab director at Heartland Urgent Care. And of course, you started your career as a medical technologist at actually a couple of different places, right? Like Exempla Healthcare, Lincoln Community Hospital, and St. Francis. So you are really a subject matter expert in clinical laboratory and pathology and just a variety of different spaces, but in each rung of your career ladder that you've taken the bold step to climb, I'm sure that there have been a lot of, you know, opportunities that have come to you where you've thought, yeah, this is nice, but it's not for me. And then another one that maybe was like, oh, you know what? Yeah, obviously I want to be this director of clinical laboratory at Bryan Health. And I'm really curious, whenever I have a guest on, I'm always wondering, like, what were the circumstances that, you know, led you to say yes to this position? For some people, you know, it's like it's a goal that they have on their whiteboard and they're like, oh, I'm always, you know, one of these days, you know, I'm going to be a director. Sometimes it's completely happenstance and it just happens to be the case. And for some, it's a great opportunity, but maybe not the right time due to personal conflicts. You know, what was it like for you when this opportunity became available? Was it an easy decision for you? Was that just a snap of the finger, no brainer? Yeah, this is it. Or were there some hurdles that you had to personally overcome to say, do I really want to do this?
Yeah, that's a funny story because initially the minute I got into my clinicals, I knew that the laboratory is where I was just born to work in the laboratory. I have such a passion about working in the clinical laboratory and I just, I can't imagine doing anything else. But as I got into it, I mean, I just love to learn. I am always looking for what else can I do? What can I do to grow? How can I improve? And one of the things that came up was like, okay, I need to, if I do want to do leadership, which I was like, I think I could do that. What do I need to do to get there? I had been pulled up to help with our outreach at Grand Island at St. Francis. I'd been pulled up to help with teaching in our blood bank. I kind of was one of those jack of all trades. I would, if they wanted to train me to do it, I'd do it and I would enjoy it. And I think it was through that I really recognized, I really like having some ownership of some of these things, but I knew that I had to get some more education. I knew that if I was going to move into a leader role, I'd really need to have a master's degree. So I I think we completed it was an accelerated program through the Bellevue University here in Nebraska, and it was all online. I had two small kids at the time. Thankfully, my husband was very supportive, but I would work all day and come home and write my papers and do my responses and got my master's in 18 months.
Wow.
And at that time, there was some restructuring happening within that hospital that I just didn't see. My spidey sense was going off and I was like, I think it might be time for me to look. And it just happened that the position was open here at Bryan, and it was, Bryan was really like the place. When I worked there, it was like, oh, they're going to Bryan. Like, it was a big deal. So when I saw that they had a manager position open, and at that time she called it the technology manager, because I would oversee each of the specialists for each of the different sections. So chemistry, hematology, microbiology, all of those. And I saw that and I thought, am I ready? Because I hadn't really done any official, like formal supervisory work at all. But I was like, I'm going to try. I'm just going to try, you know, because I've always felt like if that opportunity comes up, you have to try. You can still say no if you interview and you feel like it's not a good fit. But I feel like if you even think about it, you should probably be trying it. So I started interviewing for that position, and I just immediately felt a kinship with the director, that my predecessor, and I really enjoyed talking to her. And we just kind of, I was like, I can work for her. She said, this is going to be a good job. And coming to Brian at that time, we've gone through quite the evolution over the last 14 years since I've been here. But I cannot imagine going to work anywhere else right now. It just would be really difficult. When this job came up, when my boss said, you know, I'm going to retire and the job's going to be opening up, my initial thought was, man, I love my job, because I loved the quality manager job. I loved reading regulations. I loved implementing new policies and procedures. I know this is all the things that people don't like to do. I loved it. So I was kind of like, oh,
it
really
takes all kinds of kinds, remember?
I mean, and then I was like, this is kind of a win-win situation, right? If I don't get it, I have an awesome job. If I do get it, I have this new opportunity, right? So that's how I looked at it. And I just went in and interviewed, and I ended up getting offered the job, and I have just never looked back. But one of the things that happened before I did apply, though, I went to my teammates, the other managers, and I said, all right, guys, I think one of us has to go apply for this job. You were like, what? If we don't do it, someone else is going to come in, and we have our culture here. And what do we, are we okay with that? And we all kind of, oh God, no, we're not. And so I'm like, all right, who wants to do it? And everybody's like, and I'm like, oh. I go, okay, I'll do it. But I only want to do it if you guys are okay with it, because I don't want you to not feel supported. And I know one of the managers was like, I don't know if I can report to you. I was like, well, I'm going to need your help, because if I'm doing this, I can't do it alone. And so that was an important conversation we had early, and it's worked out pretty well. But yeah, that opportunity was a good one. I have had several opportunities along the years, that some that I have tried for and didn't get. Every single time it's worked out to my benefit. Even when I didn't get it, I'm like, oh, dodged a bullet there, because something happened later that I was like, oh man, I'm glad I wasn't there. So I always look at it as, if you don't go there, there's a reason. Like, there's a reason that it's not working for you. It's not the right time for you to be there. But I encourage my team, even if they say, you know, there's this opportunity, I'm kind of interested, I tell them, oh, try it. You know, you can always say no if you get into this interview and you're like, eh, I just don't think it's the right fit. I had another opportunity recently that was really tough, but my sister said to me, if you're not working at Brian, who are you? Because it's like who I am. It's part of what I do. I mean, so it was really, it was a good opportunity, but I had to turn it down. So I'm like, oh God, I hope when I'm older, I have another opportunity, because it was a good job.
Christy, you know, you sound like such a supportive and understanding leader, right? Like, some of the things that you've just said are things that I don't hear that often, right? Like, you're looking to get both buy-in and collaboration from people that both are your peers, and will potentially soon be, you know, as you are now, their supervisor. And it's not that often that you hear a lot of people that look for consensus prior to applying for a job. So my gut says is that now that you're in this role and you've been in this role for a bit, like, those people respect you, and they will, you know, seriously work as a solid team, because there's no, beyond the shadow of a doubt, you are all like one team and you're working towards the same goal. And what I find really interesting is that, like, you know, you've talked about your predecessor a few times. I always ask my guests, you know, are there people that you would like to thank on this show for having taken you under their wing and shown you things that maybe you weren't aware of at the time, or maybe they were, like, you know, advocates for you behind closed doors to speak on your behalf and says, hey, if you have not seen or heard of this person, Christy Nicol, you really need to meet her, because she would be an outstanding fit for X, Y, and Z. And I'd love to give you the opportunity to share maybe a person or two that you would say were instrumental in helping you become the success that you are today.
Yeah. Oh man. So many people have really helped me in my career, but in addition to my predecessor, Krista Engel, who really helped raise me in leadership, laboratory leadership. I would say both my current leader, Eric Moss, who is our VP of operations, also the president of Bryan Physician Network. And I think the big reason for him was it was a huge eye-opening experience with him when I started working for him. I had a different leader, vice president, that I reported to initially, and then that my predecessor also reported to, and then they moved me under Eric. And honestly, it was the best opportunity because it was bringing in Bryan Physician Network too. So we had that ability to really facilitate that better and easier with him. But one of the first times, and I think it was in the middle of the pandemic, something happened, and I was used to when you got asked, like, we need you to do this, it was like, you have to figure out how to do it with what you have. And I was just really honest. And I said, Eric, I do not have the resources to accommodate that right now. And he said, listen, I don't want you to tell me no, tell me what you need to be able to do that. And it just like opened my mind to this whole new world that I was like, wait, what? And he was like, no, just tell me, because if you come back and tell me that we need da, 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 and I can easily get that for you and it makes sense, we'll do that. But if you come back and say, I need a bazillion dollars and we can't do it, then we say, okay, we can't do it. Let's look at something else. So that was a big one for me. And as a higher level leader, going back, Lee Elliott, who is I think he's the president of the Wonderful Life Project, and he teaches wisdom is what it's called. And he started working with me when I was at Grand Island at St. Francis. I was still a bench, but I was having some issue. I was not a great employee at that time. I hate to say that, but I'm just totally going to be honest. I had some issues, and I had a hot temper, and I had a coworker who I just could not stand. And I had so many problems with, and I think my boss was getting ready to fire me, honestly. Looking back, I think that's what was going on. At the time, I had no idea. You know, it's like 20. I don't know what's going on. But my boss said, you're going to go meet with the vice president of HR. And I was like, oh, okay, great. You know, and I go meet with him. Well, first it was like a mediation with this other employee. And I thought, oh, for God. Okay, all right, fine. I'll play the game. Let's have our meeting. But it actually was very meaningful. And I learned so much about this person. And we got along so much better later. And I was able to really become an advocate for her with other employees. And it was really working with him. It was very critical. And he just taught me how to change my automatic thoughts so I wasn't just immediately responding and could really let it go to the thinking part of my brain and really process it better. And it took a long time. Like he did career coaching for me for about a year. And it was so fortunate for me because it came before I got my master's, and I was able to take that with me as I went on in my leadership journey. And I've still used the techniques. We used the Thoughts and Feelings book by Davis, McKay, and Fanning. And I think they're on the 5th edition now, might be 6th, but that book is so good. I go through it with every single employee that works with me. I did it when I started here. All of the specialists, I'm telling you, I came in and these people that were reporting to me had been working in the lab longer than I had been alive. So it was a little challenging, but it also was really just the best opportunity. They knew so much. And I just loved learning from them. You know, the first couple of months, all I did was meet with them once a week and say, tell me what you do. Tell me what you do. Tell me more about what you do. What are challenges you run into? And then start trying to eliminate those challenges for them so they could be more successful. And it was so fun to really build that team. And we did go through the Thoughts and Feelings book together, and we did some other training together. But that's the one I start with even now today with my managers, that when I hire a new manager, that's one of the first things we do is go through that so they know themselves better and can respond to other situations better.
So I've already like made a mental note of those two things, right? Wonderful Life Network and the Thoughts and Feelings book. So I'll definitely have to go back and look at that and see, do some research. It sounds remarkable. I went through a similar process. Not that I had any performance management issues, but I did end up going through a course that was called the Landmark Forum. And for me, that was the game changer as well, right? Like it just, there are certain people and there are certain programs that if you really, you know, commit or at least open, have an open mind to it, like can absolutely change your perspective on human interactions and interpretations. And it's, I'm so glad that you had that experience, but I'm actually more grateful that you shared that on the show, because the more resources that, you know, I and my listeners have, you know, it's something will land with at least one person. So that's really good. Christy, you know, we've talked a lot about your career and some of the people that have been instrumental. As you look forward to the next year or two, you know, what are some goals that you've set for yourself? I know that you said that, you know, you and Brian Health are like, you know, synonymous, like there's no separating you, which is fantastic to hear. But, you know, when you think about 2024, like 18, 24 months down the road, what is it that if I were to call you and I'll say, hey, Christy, it's been a while on my show, you said that you were going to do this. I'd love to know if you did it. What is that professional goal that you've set for yourself?
Well, we have a few. So the first one I want to do is I want to pass the exam for a qualification in lab safety through ASCP. I took it once and I failed. So I got to do some more studying and go back and take it again. So that's the first thing I want to do. But we also, my team and I are working on really modifying our East Campus laboratory into a smaller, essential services laboratory, and then having our West Campus laboratory be the main campus laboratory so that we can better utilize our resources and expand outreach. So we really want to be able to start doing or reference lab testing for other sites and expand our patient service centers to have some more on-demand testing sites where it would be available for other areas of the community. Currently, our on-demand testing site is on the south side of Lincoln. So it can take, I know this sounds, if you live in a bigger city, I just apologize right now, but it's not that big of a city. And it takes us like 30 minutes to get from one side of town to the other. And for us, that's too much. If it takes more than 15 minutes, it's too much. So it's not because it's just, we don't have good roadway. We have to go through the town, through everybody's houses and everything. It just takes forever. But so we want to have some more sites up on the north side and maybe more centrally located so we can have that available for other communities in Lincoln as well.
So Christy, I love how you put that out there, right? You know, like if you're from a big city, like just ignore this. But, you know, I'll tell you, even though I live outside of Chicago, like I've been to Kearney and I've been to like, you know, the small parts of New Mexico and Iowa and South Dakota. I was in Pierre, South Dakota. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, there is a difference. Like you can sit there in traffic for, you know, a 40 mile distance for 2 hours. But when you're going through a small town and like you're going through the back roads and you better hope your suspension is, you know, pretty intact to make it through some of the challenges that exist. The other thing I want to call out, Christy, like you are probably the first leader on my show that has been as transparent as she has been about failure. Right. And it's great. No, I mean that as like the utmost, greatest, most sincerest compliment, because I think there's always that misperception that people have, right? Like, oh, you're at this level. So therefore it was a, you know, you move from A to B, like in a linear vertical fashion. And the reality of it is you don't. It's all over the place. And sometimes, you know, it's not even just left and right, right? It's like up and then back down and then another one down and then like you find your way back up. I think that that's what most people need to hear more about is like, you know, failure isn't final, like, and it's not fatal. It's just a detour. And I mean, when the first time that you experienced a failure, professionally speaking, like, were you in that mindset of like, oh my God, my whole life is over. I went to school for all of this and now look at this. Or were you just like, okay, fine.
One of the things, okay, so when I first took my board exam to work as a medical technologist in those days, now I really feel old. I'm not that old, but It feels like it now, because I have people working for me that are my kids' age. And so it's kind of challenging. But when I first went to take my exam, I got done and I literally had no clue whether I'd passed or failed. I walked out of there and my husband asked, and I'm like, I seriously have no idea. Yeah. And I tell you, I squeaked by in that sucker. I barely passed, like barely. And he even said, well, you like to cut it close, don't you? And I'm like, shh, I don't test well, right? And I overread everything. But that was probably the first time that I was like, I may have really botched this. I may have failed. And I've put all this time, like you said, I put all this time, all this money into it. I had a child at the time when I was in med tech school. He was 1 year old. And so his whole second year of life, I was hardly even there because I was, and I thought, oh God. But I also thought, well, there's nothing I can do about it now. So let's go have lunch. And then if I fail, we'll just be back here in a few months to try again. But that's kind of how I look at it. You know, every time even the exam that I failed, I learned so much studying for it that I've actually already applied at work in meetings that I'm like, I know I didn't pass that exam, but man, I know a lot of stuff that I didn't know before. So it makes me happy in that aspect. And I haven't always been like, oh, well, but and it was part of the thoughts and feeling training. Like one of the things you have to go through is like, what is the first, you go through an event and it's disturbing, whatever, how big of a deal is it on a scale of 1 to 100? And like, I'd be like, oh, it's at like 75. And then you go back and go, okay, what's the worst thing? Think of the worst thing that could ever happen to you, your family, anything, like the very worst thing. Well, my mind goes into morbid places. Mm-hmm. And they're like, now that's your 100. On a scale of 1 to 100, where do you rank this now? And I'm like, 17? Like, it's like, who cares, you know? And so that's kind of one of the things that really has put things in perspective for me. And I've tried to really use that with my team too, is, you know, okay, it didn't work. So what else do we need to do? And, you know, that failed, but let's add that as an item on our checklist for change, because we have a process implementation and change form that's just a checklist of all the things that have ever failed when we had a change. And every time something misses, we're like, okay, add a reminder that we're almost excited when something doesn't work because we get to add another line to the form. It's like 17 pages long. I'm not kidding, but it's for like when we bring in a new test, when we, you know, bring in a new analyzer, when we're bringing on a new clinic, all of these things we have a checklist for. And we just, every time we're like, okay, we found another thing, let's add this. And just, we know we're developing this tool that's going to be so helpful as we move on down the road that it doesn't even faze us.
It's an incredible attitude, Christy. I love it. I think it's phenomenal. You know, we talked a little bit earlier about this in terms of, you know, how staffing is going to continue to be a problem, and not just for you and in your discipline, right? But across the healthcare spectrum. And I'll certainly agree, both as a pharmacist and as a healthcare consultant in the TA space or talent acquisition space. Yeah, there's a lot of dichotomy. That's the best way for me to put it, right? Like there's these like two polar opposites that are happening at the same time. But yet, you know, you're still going to be in a position where you may need to expand your staff. You may actually get new FTE headcount in the upcoming year. And you may get referrals from both internal and external sources. So when you have those, you know, those pearls that come across your desk, whether it's a resume or a referral, you know, you'll look for what you think are going to be knowledge, skills, and abilities that are going to be a great fit for you and for Brian Health. But when you actually get to sit and talk to them, you're looking for certain qualities or certain attributes that you think this person would be a good fit for my team or for, you know, your friend's team in a different area. What are those three qualities that really need to stand out from a candidate or even just a conversation with an individual where you would say this person has potential, may not have everything that we're looking for, but we can work with this person. We can train this individual because they have these three qualities.
One of the things that we are really good at in the laboratory is succession planning. And we have really developed kind of a ladder where people have opportunities to continue to grow. And one of those things is, you know, I look at that when I have candidates. I look at, okay, if they've tried for another position, have they done the things that we asked them to do to be able to move into another position? And yes, sometimes that's the case. On the other hand, the main things that I'm looking for are like integrity. Are they being truthful with me? I would rather have someone come in and be honest, like I have with you today, than come in and be like, oh, no, I've never had problem. Tell me you failed. That's fine. I want to know how you handle it. Because you know what? You're going to fail again. Period. It's going to happen, right? So are you going to let me know so we can handle it together? Or am I going to have to find out from somebody else because you tried to cover it up? You know, those are the things I really look for. Just that integrity, truthfulness, and really just kind of the ownership. I look for people to be really good problem solvers that are not afraid to try things that might not work, but, you know, aren't crazy, but, you know, well, this could work, you know, let's try it. Let's see. And I always tell them, like, just pilot it. You know, pilot's like the word that people are like, oh, okay, it's just a pilot, but then you can just let it keep going if it works well. And nobody even knows that you implemented it because it's just a pilot. So that's one of the things I ask them to do. But yeah, I'd say really honesty, integrity, truthfulness, and then good problem solving skills, able to pivot and not panic. Pivot, don't panic.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, I know I just made that up just now. So,
well, I'm still going to give you the credit, Chrissy. That's pretty, pretty cool.
Yeah, because really, I mean, like I said, it's not a matter of if you're going to fail, it's just when and knowing how you're going to handle it. I mean, when I have them, I just go out, like, I've told my boss, like, oh, sorry, man, I didn't do it. I'm really sorry. And he's like, okay. And I mean, we just keep plugging, just keep going, you know, but that's the big thing is just being honest and upfront with it. So it can be handled and you can work through it together and hopefully learn from it. So the next time you are successful.
Chrissy, a lot of the qualities you mentioned, when you say them to me, they don't seem that like they are attributes that can be taught. You know, Disney always, you know, used to say, we can teach anything, but we can't teach nice. And, you know, I often wonder if there is sometimes that dichotomy that exists there where it's sort of like, I don't know what to say for you. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'd love to give you an opportunity, but you're not demonstrating the things that are like critical and pivotal. Have you seen that in your area, and are you seeing more of it as time goes by, or is it really just the same percentage like in our generation, right? Like I'm 52 and I have no idea what age you are, and I'm not asking you about that either, but you know, I mean, I take a look around and I guess maybe I have a jaded perspective. Like I see my colleagues and I'm like, we were all honest people. I don't know a lot of people that weren't.
I think everybody goes through different stages in their life. And once you hit the one that we're at, and I'll say I'm close enough to yours, I'm 46. I think we just learn that there is no benefit to trying to cover things up. And if you don't care about what you're doing, go find something to do that you care about. Like that's the most important thing. And I think most of us that are still in the fields that we're in when we hit this age have said, I commit to this. This is something I like to do. This is where I'm going to work. And I'm going to do my part here. We forget that we were 20 at one point too. And maybe about to get fired and we didn't even know it, but I mean, I think part of it is just they don't even know what they don't know yet. They don't have enough life experience. And that's one thing that I actually am working on. I'm working with my team to develop a onboarding class or session that I will sit down with all of our new hires in the laboratory and say, you are now in a profession. This is not high school. This is not another job. This may not even be the other hospital across town. This is Brian. This is what we do here. And I'm going to go through some of the main things that you need to know. Now, do we go through that in orientation? Yes, we do. Do my managers go through that with them? Yes, they do. But you know what? I keep getting told by my education people that the average adult needs to hear something 7 times before they retain it. when you're going through orientation, yeah. Do you really hear something? You hear about 77 things in one time, but not, you don't, you know what I mean? It's a lot.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about somebody who may be coming out of high school, I mean, it really, it became super obvious to us when we had an employee start a petition to stop wearing lab coats. And we thought, well, that's just weird. Like, we round with them. We meet with every employee once a month. We ask the question, do you have any ideas for improvement? Do you have any, do you have the tools and resources you need? All of these things. Never once did this person say anything about the lab coat. And I said, but you know what? She's a new high school graduate. And what would you do in high school if there was something you thought needed to change, right? And they're like, oh my God. We all are like, you know, grown adults. So we're like, what are you talking about? Well, when the manager talked to her, she said, well, I just wanted to see if other people felt the same way before I even brought it up. And so it was like, okay, we appreciate your, you know, engagement and that you want to improve things, but this is how you go about it. So you come talk to us. So this is one of the things also that I want to put in that orientation, like, welcome to healthcare. This is what it's like. We do not close. If there's a tornado, we do not close. In fact, we have to work more right. when there's a tornado. So it's like just getting them to understand those things. And I, it's interesting you said that you can't teach people to care or be nice.
Disney's comment is always, you know, we can teach anything. We just can't teach nice.
I think you can, but I think it's very difficult. One of the things that I'm working on is like with new hires and making sure that, you know, they know how to have communications with their staff, like especially a new leader who maybe has never supervised people before. What I notice is when they're fresh, they come in like, okay, I have to have everything put, I have to be very professional. I have to always know the answers. I have to be on point all the time. I cannot make mistakes. And I'm like, whoa, back up, because that's not reality. And it's going to make you sick because you're going to be worried all the time because that's not how it works. You know, be human. It's okay to feel bad when you're telling somebody that they're being terminated because their attendance is bad. It's okay to tell them, I'm very sorry that I have to do this, but you didn't meet the expectations that we have defined here at Brian. And I have to ask you to take your things and we're going to have to part here. You know, I mean, it's okay to show that empathy, because if you don't, you come off very aggressive or almost like you enjoy terminating people. I had one manager that told me, I can't wait until I feel comfortable with terminations. And I said, the day you become comfortable with it is the day you should quit, because you no longer care about what you're doing. And I said, it should never be comfortable for you. So being able to do it and being comfortable with it are two different things.
Christy, you've dropped so many pearls of wisdom and a lot of great advice in this entire conversation. I've loved every second of this. I know we're nearing time, but you know, I always like to ask, you know, if there's one piece of advice you would give listeners today when they're thinking about how to either pivot or how to advance within a vertical that they're interested in, or maybe just going back to talk to your younger self and say, hey, Christy, trust me, you're going to be fine. I just need you to either start doing this now or don't stop doing this. Like, what would that one piece of advice be?
I think the biggest piece of advice I could give would be one, to never stop learning. Always have a mind that wants to expand or always be eager to learn. And two, don't be afraid of change. It's uncomfortable. Yeah. A lot of people have challenges with it, but you always learn from it. And if you learn from it, you can evolve from it. And if you're thinking of something that seems kind of challenging, don't be afraid to try and fail. I mean, I took my exam and I failed. I got to take another one, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it because I feel like it's necessary and because I want to continue to learn. So just don't think that because you failed that that's the end. Like you said, it's just a pivot point, and maybe there's a reason that it didn't work the way you thought it would or the way you wanted it to.
Awesome. Christy, thanks so much for being on the show. Again, I really appreciate all of the great advice and the great insights that you've given. It's been really, really fun talking to you today. And I want to wish you nothing but success in the few months or few weeks we have left of 2022. I'm sure 2023 will bring a whole slew of new successes as well as challenges, but I'm sure you will pivot very, you know, professionally, and you will do amazing work. And I'm looking forward to seeing you continue to take healthcare to a higher level.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Healthcare and Hire podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow and subscribe for more. I'm your host, Iqbal Acha, and I invite you to connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Let me know what you thought about this episode or my show in general. Also, visit me at www.achainternational.com to learn more about how I help healthcare professionals and healthcare leaders advance their career, build a better brand, and create a leadership legacy. I'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, let's keep working to take healthcare to a higher level.